morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. I am Yada. Each weekday here on GCN, we strive to expose the destructive myths which are associated with all of the religions of the world, most political schemes, patriotism in the media, as long as well as military and intelligence, even economic schemes, all working against those they claim to serve. Instead of merely presenting the news regarding these things, our mission is to understand what is actually occurring while predicting how these events will shape our world. Currently, as it relates to the news, we're doing an in-depth analysis of the statement that Dianne Feinstein, the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, made in defense of Spygate, and how the evidence and the truth behind the particular individual she cited as a benefit of Spygate actually exposes the U.S. government's malfeasance to the point where this should be sufficient in and of itself to cause anyone who is still political or patriotic to cease both activities. In our second hour, we're going to turn to God. We're going to engage him on his terms, which is through evidence and reason, not through religion, since his is the lone reliable voice in an exceedingly troubled world. Our phone number for those of you who would like to participate in this discussion over the next 2 hours is 877-300-7645. As a program note, tomorrow's show is going to be an archive presentation chosen by Scott. So if you like it, credit him. If you don't, blame me. And that is because I am off to my eldest son's wedding. And on Thursday and Friday morning, you're going to have the opportunity to to listen to Larry as he hosts the show. Larry is our most frequent call-in guest and is someone who has an extraordinarily complete and accurate understanding of Yahweh, and his testimony, and is particularly keen at contrasting Yahweh's testimony with the Christian religion. And then, as usual, on Friday, after the second hour of the show, we're going to have a discussion with IQ Al-Rasuli, most likely focusing on the news, and there's a lot of news relative to Islam. But this time, rather than Yata interviewing him, it's going to be Scott interviewing IQ. Now, before we return to
I'm going to have to earn my paycheck this week.
You're going to have to earn the big bucks. Absolutely. In fact, I will contribute my entire compensation to your effort.
Oh, that's not good.
as Scott's laughing because I am not paid for this. It is a labor of love. Before we return to the story of David Headley, born Daoud Galani, and the outright dishonesty of Senator Dianne Feinstein, the senator from the state of California who serves as the chairman of the Senate's Intelligence Committee, and her lie on behalf of the spine, the breach of the U.S. Constitution for unreasonable search and seizure of private information of citizens who have done nothing to justify the search and seizure of their private communications. I do need to tell you that in addition to the 93,000 people who have been killed in Syria as a direct result of the Senate's approval of the invasion of Iraq, in addition to the 93,000 that are dead in Syria, an equal number have been kidnapped, tortured, and raped in Iraq, all a direct derivative of the Senate's approval of the United States invading that country, invading Iraq, which led directly to the Syrian war. Now, I say that, and those who have listened to this program know, that the Syrian war started off as a peaceful protest, but immediately escalated to an armed civil war as a direct result of the fact that Iraq was given to Iran by the United States as a result of that invasion, and therefore Iran's power swept across the region, and they came to control both Syria and Lebanon in addition to Iraq. And so the Sunnis in Saudi Arabia, out of fear in the rise of Shia Islam, sought to turn that the result into a proxy war. And the first to bear arms in that war were the Awakening Councils, those that America armed to offset the new Sunni or new Shia influence in Iraq. Also, we have to realize that it was the U.S. Senate that approved the invasion of Iraq, and therefore the fact that in Iraq, prior to our invasion, there was almost no terrorism, and now there's a massive terrorist event every day. Today, 29 Shia Muslims in a mosque in Baghdad were murdered by Sunni Muslims. The first bomber detonated himself at the checkpoint outside of the mosque, and during the confusion, the second walked into the mosque and blew himself directly to Allah, screaming Allahu Akbar. In this month, more than 1,000 people have been killed. There were more than 1,000 killed last month, more than 1,000 killed the previous month in Iraq. We left that country vulnerable and broken. And so the same U.S. government that is responsible for the war in Syria, that is responsible for the civil war in Iraq, lied on behalf of David Headley and said that the capture of David Headley was a direct result of America spying on Americans, on the confiscation of internet data from private citizens, and also the collection of telephone data. That was not even remotely true. As a matter of fact, the David Headley case is far more akin to, in fact, an even more extreme version of the Tamerlane case related to the Boston bombing, where the FBI was given direct knowledge of their intended plan and of their Islamist fundamentalism, and yet chose to not only ignore them, but in the case of David Headley, employ them. They worked for the U.S. government at the time. They were mapping out the strategy to kill over 100 people in Mumbai, India. So the story of David Headley, who was born Daoud Galini, continues with the realization that he attended the cadet college, Hassan Abdal, which is a preparatory boys' school for the military in Pakistan. In 1977, after the Pakistani government was overthrown in a military coup, Shirill Headley, which was Daoud Galini, David Headley's mother, traveled to Pakistan and arranged to take Daoud back with her to the United States. Now he wanted to come back to the United States, but for the express purpose of undermining not only the United States, but also any part of the world that was not Islamic. He lived in a bar, right above a bar that his mother owned, called the Khyber Pass Pub. Interesting name. The Galani stayed in regular contact, we're told, with his military classmates in Pakistan, who often engaged in impassioned debates regarding Islam and the politics of Islam through their emails. So we have a chain of emails where Galani was talking about how things, for example, how NATO was a criminal venom dropping 22,000 pounds of bombs on unsuspecting, unarmed Afghan villagers. You see, when the United States invaded Afghanistan and Iraq, even if there was hope for those countries, which there wasn't, because with Islam there will never be hope, but even if there was hope for those countries, we would have put ourselves in a position where we not only would have manufactured 100 jihadists for everyone we killed, and in collateral damage between Iraq and Afghanistan, 1 million civilians have died. But beyond that, the realization is that the Muslims, like David Headley, take the world's response to their terrorist acts, when the world retaliates to their terrorist acts, they take the collateral damage that occurs as a result of those things to out of context, and then uses that as the motivation, as the rage to go off and kill non-Muslims, saying that because there is collateral damage when the West responds to Islamic terrorist attacks, that the killing of innocent Afghanis in this case is justification for murdering people who had nothing to do with it. The problem with that is, of course, that of every 100 Muslims that are killed or murdered in a savage way through an act of terrorism, 99 of the 100 are killed by a fellow Muslim, just as we witnessed today with 29 blown to smithereens by two suicide bombers in Baghdad. And, of course, the Western engagement is a response. But when you realize that that is what is occurring and how it's being manipulated, you ought not respond to a religious terrorist act with bullets and bombs. You ought to respond to the one thing that is lethal to the cause, which is the truth. But we don't wield that as a government. Writing about Pakistan's chief enemy, he said, "We will retaliate against India." Now, India is not really an enemy of Pakistan in the sense of India doesn't attack Pakistan, but Pakistan absolutely terrorizes India. And the reason that groups like Lashkar-e-Taiba exist is expressly to terrorize India so that India becomes an Islamic country. At one time, right after the death of Muhammad, Muslims, enraged with Islam, becoming uncivilized because of Islam, murdered hundreds of millions of people. And one of the places that they savaged was India. And once savaged by Islam, forever belongs to Islam, according to the Islamic mindset. And so the Pakistani Muslims are convinced, because they once savaged India, that they once again should control India, and therefore they're trying to terrorize India into submission. We'll return to Shattering Myths in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. This story is essential for us to understand. And the reason that, I know that we're getting into details, you might say, oh, who cares about the details? When you understand the details, which Dianne Feinstein knew all about in this story, and you realize that this woman, who is a senior senator from the largest state in the United States, who is head of the Senate's Intelligence Committee, who has spoken on behalf of undermining the U.S. Constitution, justifying unreasonable search and seizure based upon stopping a man that she claims would have led to another Mumbai attack in the United States, David Headley. When you know the truth about David Headley, it reveals that you cannot trust anyone associated with your government. You can't trust the Senate, you can't trust the Congress, you can't trust the administration. They're all liars. They're all deliberately doing things that are undermining your freedom. This, if there ever was a story that tells you that to be patriotic and political in America is a fool's folly, that it is suicidal, this is that story. And so we're going to continue with the details, because understanding the story of David Headley as it relates to the terrorist attack in India, his position in the United States, his being an agent of the United States, and him being paid and directed by Pakistan's ISI, with the United States being its largest facilitator, is an extraordinary story. It is an awakening moment. And we didn't even have to reveal classified information to bring it to you. Well, in 1985, in the United States, Gilani, who is now David Headley, married a Penn State University student. They divorced in 1987, according to Wikipedia, due to cultural conflicts. Yeah, she couldn't stand being beaten is the reason. It wasn't cultural conflicts. It was Islam and the fact that she was beaten because she went to the feds and said, the fact I was beaten is one thing, but I'm here to tell you, this man is planning to commit a mass terrorist attack on Mumbai, India, and specifically the Taj Mahal Hotel. And guess what the feds did about it? Nothing. In fact, they employed Mr. Headley. In the late 1980s, Headley, at the time Gulani, opened two video rental stores in New York City. He was first arrested on drug charges, and then he cooperated with the DEA in exchange for a lighter sentence. So, he is a drug pusher. Sells drugs out of his video store, and the DEA says, ha, what a perfect guy for us to employ. And so they do. In 1997, he was arrested. Now, this is the guy that the United States government was paying to work for them. In 1997, he was arrested for, along with another man, for smuggling heroin into the United States from Pakistan. In exchange, by the way, the reason it's coming from Pakistan is when the United States engaged initially with the Taliban and Al-Qaeda to go against the Soviet-backed government, the access to the heroin, the poppy growing fields in Afghanistan was now, the proceeds was funneled through Pakistan as a way to support Islamic terrorism. Pakistan or Afghanistan is the dominant source of heroin for the world. And it comes through Pakistan because Pakistan controls the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. So here we go. He was now arrested for smuggling heroin into the country. In exchange for information about his long-term Pakistani drug contacts, Gilani received a considerable lighter sentence once again. The United States government chose to partner with a drug smuggler once, and then when he continued to smuggle drugs, they said, oh, let's do that same thing again. It worked out so well the first time, let's double down. And he received another light sentence, 15 months in jail and 5 years of supervised release. And then a year later, in 1998, he was delivered to a low-security federal correction institution in Fort Dix. He later started a supervised release period. He spent a year in jail for smuggling heroin. In July 1999, Howard Leader, Headley's attorney, requested permission for Headley to travel back to Pakistan, and it was granted. We will return to Shattering Myths and shattering the credibility of the United States government in just a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Well, as it turns out, Judge Carol Ammon granted the unusual request for a felon who was incarcerated on trafficking heroin from Pakistan, granted the unusual request for this felon to travel back to Pakistan. Now, the only reason that Judge Carol Ammon would have done this is because, you see, Mr. Headley, who was still Gilani at the time, was an agent now working for the U.S. government. It has been disclosed that he was working for the DEA, but I'd bet my last dollar he was also working for the CIA. We were employing him. We wanted him to go back because the idea of for the DEA to track the drugs in Pakistan is of no use. The DEA is going to have no access to Pakistan, none. And so for the DEA to check back into Pakistan for the way the drugs flow out of Afghanistan, complete waste of time. You would never do that because you can't intervene in Pakistan. However, for the CIA to say, you know, we're trying to track terrorism, and this is how terrorism is funded. Therefore, to go back as an agent of the CIA makes perfect sense. And as an agent of the DEA, a guy that has now been arrested and convicted twice of drug dealing, would never be trusted in this regard. But as a agent of the CIA, the federal government could intervene and get him released for this mission. Anyway, the leader of the assistant U.S. attorney, Loan Hong, made a joint application. So the U.S. Attorney at the time made the application to Judge Amon to terminate Headley's supervised release 3 years early. So this is highest levels of the federal government. That doesn't happen for the DEA. It does happen for the CIA. The judge agreed to the request and discharged Headley from any further probation. Headley traveled to Pakistan multiple times to conduct undercover surveillance for the Drug Enforcement Administration. Well, that may have been the ruse. That may have been the guise, but he was working for the CIA. And in 2002 and 2003, he attended Lashkar-e-Taiba training camps in Pakistan. This is typical of the CIA. We pay people to turn tattletale on fundamentalist Muslim groups, but all they do is take the money and pass it on to the fundamentalist terrorist groups while laughing at us. In 2002, he married his girlfriend of 8 years in New York. They had four children together. In August 2005, Gilani was arrested in New York after a fight with his then-wife. His wife told federal agents that Gilani was an active member of Lashkar-e-Taiba, that he trained extensively in Pakistani camps, and that they had shopped for night vision goggles and other equipment, and that he was planning terrorist attacks. He beat her. She went to federal agents, that's the FBI, and revealed everything that we should have needed to know about a man that was already in the U.S. government's radar, that the U.S. government was employing, and that should have been more than enough for them to begin prosecution against him. But no, they didn't. Nor did they alert the Indian government. Gulani trained five more times in Lashkar-e-Taiba at their camps in Pakistan. In 2007, a court testimony by a fellow militant described the Lashkar training camp, which was guarded and supplied, as being guarded and supplied by Pakistani army soldiers. So he was being trained by the Pakistani army in a Pakistani army training camp that was deploying Lashkar-e-Taiba as the United States government deploys its Marines. In October 2010, and that was known now in 2007 to the U.S. government, who continued to pay $3 billion a year to Pakistan, labeling Pakistan as our ally in the war against terrorism, when Pakistan's government was directly involved knowingly to the United States in not only training terrorists, but deploying them, and in particular, deploying this group to kill over 100 people in Mumbai, India. On October 2010, it was revealed that Headley's wives had complained, not only in 2005, but also in 2007. I told you the case in 2005, but in 2010, it became public that his second wife had complained in 2007 for the same reason. She had been beaten to the point of near death. She told the federal authorities, the FBI, all the details about Headley's terrorist activities. But it was to no effect. The U.S. Director of National Intelligence, catch this man's name now, James R. Clapper, undertook a review of how Headley had been handled and dropped the case. Mr. Clapper is the very guy who went ballistic a week ago when it was revealed that the U.S. was indiscriminately spying on Americans' use of their telephones and then the following day of their keystrokes on the Internet. He was the gentleman who was the highest-ranking officer in the national intelligence regarding this, who went ballistic, saying that the revelation that the United States government was spying on Americans, was violating the U.S. Constitution, was the revelation of it was the crime, not doing it was the crime. This is the very man who had explicit evidence regarding Headley, who is now being triumphed as the benefit of spying. He had express knowledge, not as part of that spying, but from the testimony of both wives, that this man was deliberately planning a terrorist attack on behalf of the Pakistani government in India. Now, if that isn't enough to cause you to despise your government, to hate everything it stands for, when this is the justification for annulling the U.S. Constitution, when the U.S. government itself and the man speaking on this is up to his eyeballs in responsibility, what would it take? In 2006, he changed his name to David Headley so as to make border crossings between the United States and other countries like Pakistan and India easier. He moved his family to Chicago, where he claimed to work for Hussein Rana's immigration agency. Rana had been a cadet at the college Hassan Abdel with the Pakistani military that David Headley had attended. Rana was a co-conspirator, by the way, in the Mumbai bombings. Headley visited his family home in Lahore in 2000. While there, he befriended Lashkar's spiritual leader, Hafiz Muhammad Saeed, whose ideology he came to embrace. You know, Saeed only has one ideology, Islam. He's a fundamentalist Muslim. Everything he does is for Allah. Everything he does is consistent with the Quran. Everything he does is consistent with Muhammad's example as it is presented in the Hadith. Therefore, Hafiz Muhammad Saeed is an Islamic terrorist. Pakistan officially outlawed Lashkar-e-Taiba in 2002. However, after that and through 2005, Headley did a stint as a secret Lashkar terror camps that were being run by the Pakistani government. The United States knows this. Lashkar assigned him to work with Saeed Mir, known as Saeed Majid, which means the place of prostration, the militant chief who allegedly became the lead plotter in the Mumbai attacks. In January 2006, a Lashkar officer named Samir Ali interviewed Headley and referred him to Major Iqbal, who became his main handler in Lahore. Iqbal described Headley as a fat, deep-voiced man in his mid-30s, and who is described as that, introduced the American man identified as Shah, and he promised Headley financial support for his terrorist operations in India. Major Iqbal is a member of the Pakistani military, an officer in the Pakistani military. At subsequent meetings in safe houses, Iqbal, Major Iqbal, gave Headley secret documents on India. He assigned a soldier to give him standard intelligence training and briefings. Headley learned techniques for detecting surveillance, developing sources and other skills, and practiced with the lower-ranking officers on the streets of Lahore, doing joint exercises with the Pakistani military. The specialized training lasted several months, and he continued thereafter as Major Iqbal taught Headley how to use other devices pertinent to his missions. Headley said Major Iqbal gave him $25,000. That would be money processed through the ISI from the United States to set up a front company in Mumbai as a cover while conducting reconnaissance from the Mumbai terrorist attacks, all directed by the Pakistani government. Headley spent months scouting the Taj Mahal Hotel and other targets for the attack on behalf of Major Iqbal and the Pakistani army. The latter also sent him on separate missions to gather intelligence on atomic research centers and military sites around India. Major Iqbal contributed advice about tactical issues in the Mumbai plots, escape routes for the gunmen, setting up safe houses, hijacking an Indian vessel at sea, all while being an officer in the Pakistani army. David Coleman Headley, 48, was charged by the U.S. federal authorities in Chicago in complaints unsealed on October 27, 2009, of plotting against the employees of the newspaper in Copenhagen, which was the newspaper that showed Mohammed inspiring terrorist acts. And Headley is accused of traveling to Denmark as a scout to scout the building for the Post and newspaper and a nearby synagogue for an attack by terrorists. Now, at the time, the United States government had direct knowledge that David Headley was supervising on behalf of the Pakistani army terrorist attacks in India and did nothing about them and said nothing about them during his arrest. That is a crime. After Headley's arrest, the U.S. Assistant Secretary of State, Robert Blake, said that India would have access to question Headley, although the possibility of extraditing him back to India, which is where he should have been sent since he was the one of two surviving plotters and instigators in the terrorist scheme that left 166 people dead. That's where he should have gone for trial. Note, the United States, in their plea agreement with Headley, said that he could not be extradited. You see, the United States didn't want its dirty laundry aired. It didn't want the world to know that Headley was working for the U.S. government at the time that he was plotting these attacks. The U.S. government didn't want anyone to know that they had the goods on Headley, that they had had both of his wives, whom he had beaten, testify that he was planning these terrorist attacks, and that we had foreknowledge of them and did not warn the Indian government, just as the FBI had foreknowledge of 9/11 from Ramzi Youssef and did not warn the American people. Well, a classified Indian report based upon an interrogation of Headley under the oversight and constraints of the U.S. government concluded that Headley's scouting trips to Mumbai were financed and planned by the Pakistani government and expressly the Army and their ISI. That report was leaked to the U.S. media in October of 2010. Now, that should have been enough to force the U.S. Senate to stop sending military aid to India. In fact, 3 or 4 years prior to that, when it became obvious that Pakistan was lying about their relationship with terrorist groups that they said were now illegal but were still funding them, orchestrating them, managing them, when that became known through Headley, we should have told the American people the truth and said that Pakistan is not an ally in this alleged war against terrorism, but is instead the enemy. But no. The U.S. government had no interest in telling Americans the truth. They had no interest in stopping American military aid to the government most responsible for perpetrating Islamic terrorist attacks, but continued to do so. Another military officer is suspected as a co-conspirator and was identified by the pseudonym Individual A in the first FBI complaint against Headley. He has also recently left the Pakistani army as a colonel. This second officer, suspected in the complaint, affiliated with Lashkar-e-Taiba, was arrested in 2009 in Pakistan on unspecific charges and, of course, later released because he was doing exactly what the Pakistani government wanted him to do. He was identified by the FBI in December 2009 as Abu Rahman Hashim Sayed. He is also known as Pasha. He is wanted by the FBI. Why bother? What, is the FBI going to turn him also into a double agent? An Associated Press story in November 24th of 2009 said that five Pakistani Army officers, including a retired brigadier general and two active lieutenant colonels, had been detained for questioning in Pakistan. They had all been in telephone contact with Headley. But the next day, the Pakistani military spokesman said, oh, you know, that has to do with our internal affairs. Those are security matters, and we're not at able to release that information to you. Separately, Headley told Indian investigators in June 2010 that his trip to Mumbai, India in 2006 was sponsored by a Pakistani colonel in the ISI. The officer named Major Iqbal handed Mr. Headley $25,000. This testimony was later affirmed by Rana, his co-conspirator, who said exactly the same thing, providing all of the same details when he was interviewed in India after the attacks. The FBI investigation into the 2008 Mumbai attacks focused on Major Iqbal and Syed Mir, both of whom were managers of and handlers of Headley's, both of whom worked for the Pakistani government as part of their military, as part of their ISI. And later, they found that these same men had orchestrated the attack of the Denmark newspaper under the code name the Mickey Mouse Project. Well, I want to tell you what's Mickey Mouse about all of this is the truth of the United States government, the malfeasance of the United States government, the deception of this government.